It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona. And we're gonna, you know, segue into something else today that I think ties into what we were talking about yesterday. I want to share with you what that is. Foreclosure gate is becoming a big, giant thing. We've been talking about this for a year. When the Kansas Supreme Court came out saying, I don't think this is going the way it's supposed to be going. You know, this bank-created filing system, transfer ownership on Excel spreadsheet, kind of trading a bunch, making a bunch of money, kind of do, nope, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture to sanctify that. When that happened, we knew, oh, it's all coming out, and it has. The reason I bring that up is now we have a situation to where they may have sold multiple mortgage-backed securities to various different entities, and they're trading the same one with different people, and it's overlapping, and they're going, wait, we unravel this. You know, there's not only fraud from the beginning, it was a fraud that started right after the beginning. There's step one, two, three, four, five of fraud. It's all about fraud. Then you get to the story to where we have on Freedom's Phoenix today, why the banks must not get away with this. Once the population gets into its head that the very legal code that says you can't steal someone's house by lying about debts in court only applies to them and not to the banks, we're not far from the general population deciding that the whole thing is, you know, what difference does it make? What's the proper role of government? What gives them legitimacy? What is it that makes them, I don't know, have the ability for us to even care what they say? When you got a black robe, you know, bangs a gavel, and you go, okay, well, I guess that's it. You know, what happens when you don't even care what they do? We're getting to that point. And there's a lot of stories that go around. That's what our story is today. Who I have on, my special guest, is Oliver Diaz. Now, he was a Supreme Court justice now for Mississippi. And the reason this is of interest is because you have a Supreme Court justice from Mississippi that now is an advocate for the FBI just doing their job, doing it right, not being corrupt, because he was the victim of such things. So we have a famous director from Hollywood that got in trouble with the FBI for even answering the phone. You know, it's kind of one of those Martha Stewart things. You know, did you tell us exactly what we wanted to know, the way we wanted to know it, and the way we did it, and you didn't, and you're going to jail. And here comes Oliver Diaz. Oliver, I got you there?
Yes, glad to be here. Thanks.
Oliver, you can see where I'm going with this, is that if we're going to have a government, if we're going to have this rule of law, if we're going to have law enforcement with the shiny badge and always available gun to, you know, they rule me kind of mentality, you know, they should at least follow their own rules or the promise that they made us that to legitimize their existence, they're there to protect our individual rights. Well, go ahead and tell us a story about Mr. McTiernan and tell us who he is and how you got involved. And we got about 5 minutes for the first break. So let's go ahead and get the preliminaries done on this. Go.
Okay, great. Yeah, glad to be here today. Thank you for allowing me to be here and tell this story. I think folks are going to be shocked when they find out exactly what's going on. Maybe not the folks that listen to your program because they hear this stuff all the time. But I think the general population out there does not realize that that they can be prosecuted by the federal government for doing very, very simple things. I represent John McTiernan, who is a famous Hollywood director. He directed Predator, The Hunt for Red October, and several other Hollywood blockbusters. John was caught up in this Anthony Pelicano scandal out in Hollywood. He had actually hired Mr. Pelicano as a private detective when he was going through a divorce. John sitting at home one night answering the telephone.
Okay, now wait a minute. Tell us who Pelicano. Well, tell us who Pelicano is. You know, this famous Hollywood scandal. Not all of us even know who the heck is or what the scandal is.
Yeah. Anthony Pelicano was a private investigator, private detective type, working in the L.A., Hollywood area. He was retained by a lot of the Hollywood types when they're going through divorces and things like that. Well, John McTiernan hired Mr. Pelicano at that time. Come to find out, Mr. Pelicano was actually engaged in or accused of wiretapping scandal out in Hollywood. So while the FBI was investigating this, they call my client, John McTiernan, at home on the telephone by himself. He answers the phone, and they ask him about Mr. Pelicano and whether or not he's hired Mr. Pelicano. John, not really wanting to talk, thinking it may be telemarketers or something like that late at night or at that time of day, says that no, he hasn't hired him, and says he doesn't want to talk to the FBI, hangs up the phone. Come to find out, just a couple of weeks later, the FBI charges him with lying to the FBI based on this one simple telephone call around dinner time. Now, mind you, the telephone call is not recorded. He's not warned of his rights that he's being investigated or anything like that. It's just a simple telephone call. There's no other persons listening to the call. It's John and this purported FBI agent. And because of the one statement to this FBI over the telephone, John is prosecuted for lying to the FBI.
Which has a sentence possible term of what?
5 years in a federal penitentiary, believe it or not.
Okay, so this is the first thing that, you know, we do a thing every year called the Freedom Summit. Oh, yeah, freedomsummit.com. Everybody go to freedomsummit.com. First weekend, December, got another big one, really big show. Now, my partner in that, his name is Mark Victor. He's a criminal defense attorney here. He's well-known, does a lot of media and just, you know, doing some butt-whipping. And his thing is, first, you don't talk to cops. I mean, that's just the first thing right there. And so, you know, this is a perfect example of why. So you don't get in trouble for the things you didn't say. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he even knew that it was an FBI agent to begin with. It's a guy calling him at night at home on the phone, and that don't mean nothing.
That's exactly right. He had no idea that it was really the FBI. And to complicate things even further, John was a Hollywood director, like I told you before. He had worked with lots of stars. He would occasionally get phone calls from reporters posing as investigators and things of that nature, trying to get information about stars.
When we come back, Oliver, they're going to push. They're going to push the button on us, Oliver.
And, he did receive many phone calls about.
When we come back, we'll go ahead and find out more about this and the FBI's real reason for going after him. There's something else going on here. Hopefully we'll find out what it is. Got the attention of Mississippi Supreme Court Justice. We'll be right back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here from Phoenix, Arizona. My special guest, Oliver Diaz, former Mississippi Supreme Court Justice, taking on the case of director John McTiernan, producer, whatever he is, he's a Hollywood guy. And I tell you what, he's been Hollywooding. You know, you got the guy doing Predator and Die Hard with the Vengeance of Bruce Willis and Hunt for Red October and the original Die Hard. And on, I mean, it goes long list of stuff. Ooh, Rollerball. Ooh, Thomas Crown Affair. The 13th Warrior. You start to get the drift. Here's boy's got some coin, and he's out there in Hollywood, gets a call at night. It's FBI, and they say, hey, what do you know about the fill-in-the-blank person? I don't know anything. Have a nice day. Boom. Hangs up the phone. Boom. FBI says, you lie. Prosecute. Going after. Going to get him. Well, what happens when you're in Hollywood? You know how this works. You go, all right, you guys want to play? Let me tell you where this is tried. In the court of public opinion. And you want to play this game? Let's play. Well, they're playing, and I want to help. So here we go. Now, Oliver, how far off am I, man? They want to play? Is this what we're going to do? We're going to have this court of public opinion? Is that where we're going?
That's exactly what's going on. That's exactly what's happening. The only thing you got wrong there is that John is really not a Hollywood type. He is a director. He did all the movies that you said, but John actually lives in Wyoming on his ranch. He tries to stay out of L.A. and Hollywood as much as he could.
So he got the call while he's in Wyoming?
More far removed than you thought.
So he got the call while he's in Wyoming?
Exactly. He gets a call from L.A. while he is in Wyoming, eating dinner with his kids and wife.
Okay. So let's just take this back. The FBI charges him for a reason. Are they really after John, or are they after someone else wanting him to roll on him?
Oh, yeah. He's not the target of the investigation. That's clear. They were wanting what they wanted was that a big Hollywood name. These prosecutors had uncovered this wiretapping scheme that they were alleging that Mr. Pelicano was involved with, and they thought that they could get a lot of big names out of Hollywood. Well, come to find out, they really couldn't. They couldn't get anybody, any big names of any big stars in Hollywood that were using this guy for those purposes. So what they were able to do was...
Okay, wait. See, you got it.
Sure.
You're going on this wiretapping thing. We haven't talked about that. Now, he's doing wiretap. Who do you wiretap? Some senator or something? Why is the FBI so concerned?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a senator or anything like that. It was alleged that he was doing wiretapping in relation to his private investigation business that he was running out of L.A. and Hollywood.
Yeah, so,
they thought that by investigating this guy, they could get a bunch of Hollywood stars who were using this guy illegally, is basically what they were trying to do.
Okay, see, I don't see the, are they just going for press? They didn't have anything else to do? I mean, you know, I'll give you an example. Some states have, you know, very, I'm sure being Supreme Court Justice in Mississippi, that you would know the law there is maybe different than here. Here in Arizona, if one of the people knows that the conversation is being taped, they don't have to tell the other person. Now, of course, law enforcement and government and police officers and all that, man, they don't like that none too much at all. So they're doing everything they can to try and change it. Just outs them for what they are. But the thing is that, you know, to actually tape a conversation where neither party knows that it's going on, I would imagine pretty much everywhere that's illegal, right?
That's correct. And that's what they're alleging.
Okay, now wait, what's the crime?
Not unlike some of the other folks out in Hollywood. They're out to get a big name for themselves. And the only way to do that is to get
big names, I get it.
Involving big stars.
Okay, now let me go ahead and finish my questions. So we have a wiretapping is what kind of crime? You're guilty of wiretapping in California, and that's a felony, a misdemeanor, what class, a jail term? What's the problem with that?
Yeah, that would be a felony. And it would be a felony in any state in the United States to record someone's conversation without either party knowing it. Mississippi is just like you described in Arizona, where one person knows, it's fine. But when neither party consents or knows about the taping, then it is a felony in any state in the United States.
Okay, now this is one thing, kind of the theme of why I wanted to have you on, along with all the other things of government. It's okay for them to do it, but it's not for us. And I don't have a problem with, you know, hey, man, you know, I don't want to be taped and without, you know, somebody knowing in the conference, you know, whatever. But the thing is they go, yeah, but we're the U.S. freaking government, and we can tape anybody anytime, any way we want, and maybe we'll kind of sort of ask somebody and get permission later and retroactively say it's okay, kind of, you know, because we're the freaking big brother government, okay? So it's always a different standard for them. So now, all of a sudden, we have this person, and I'll guarantee you somebody complained, somebody with some contact, somebody that golfs with somebody, somebody that shares an escort service with some, you know, government guy or something. I mean, somebody. And they said, you know, I want this guy done. He screwed up my whatever. He caught me with my mistress. He cost me a gazillion dollars in my divorce. And my sense of justice is served if I can get my buddy over here at the FBI to go put this guy in the ground. Go get him. And they go, yes, and boss, that will we be doing. And that's exactly what's going on, I bet you. So now they have some kind of influence that's encouraging. The FBI has nothing better to do than to go after this guy, this private investigator that's wiretapping people, calling people in Wyoming, prosecuting them for not. I mean, you know, I can see that. If it's wiretapping, I'm not sure where the FBI would get involved. Is it because it's the phone system or something? How does the FBI get jurisdiction?
Yeah, it is a federal felony, so the FBI does have jurisdiction.
Okay, so they get into this, and they're going after it. Ooh, it's Hollywood. We're going to have some fun. So now they're going after this. They want this guy. I still don't understand why so much manpower and effort would go into this. It had to have involved somebody. Do you know who it is that he is first alleged of wiretapping that got the ball rolling in the beginning?
No, I wasn't involved in that aspect of the case. My representation was of John McTiernan, so I don't know the genesis of the wiretapping prosecutions or why or when it began exactly.
Okay. All right, so they got a, you know, Hollywood bigwig in their mind sitting in Wyoming, you know, say, I don't want to talk to you, and we're going after them. So the next meetings that they have with John McTiernan, the producer, director, what is he? He's a director, right?
Yeah, he's a director. That's right.
So they go to the director and they say, you know what, we're charging you. Did they actually charge him?
Yeah, they charged him with lying to the FBI. Okay. That's what's so absurd about this case. It began as a wiretapping prosecution against Mr. Pelicano, but they didn't have an allegation of wiretapping against Mr. McTiernan. What they had to do was create a crime of lying to the FBI in order to prosecute John McTiernan.
Okay, but I don't understand how this gets them in their original. They want him to turn on them somehow and say, "Okay, I'll give up. I used him and he wiretapped, and there's your evidence on him, and I'll testify if you'll go away." Or they just wanted to get ink in the newspaper to out this guy to benefit somebody that wanted him outed. I mean, it seems in Hollywood, these kind of things, it seems like advertising. If I was a private investigator, I'm like, woohoo, I'm the wiretap guy, you know? So I don't understand who benefits from this prosecution.
Well, it's really quite simple. The prosecutors benefit from the prosecution. They needed to prosecute a big named Hollywood star. And the only one they could get was John McTiernan, and they couldn't get him for wiretapping, so they manufactured the crime of lying to an FBI agent.
Okay, what stage are we in this case? Now they've actually indicted him, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, the case has been in the court system for a number of years now. That's what's sort of complicating about it.
Okay, now that's what where we'll start when we come back. After this break, we're with Oliver Diaz. He's a former Supreme Court Justice for the state of Mississippi, defending John McTiernan, director in Hollywood, big blockbusters like Predator and Die Hard, and the FBI going at him because they can. Oh! All right, we're going to find out more when we come back. You stay right there.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Yeah, rumbling with the man! It's always the man! The only reason I was interested in this case is because it's just, you know, is this what the federal government's got time to be doing? This is where they're at? They're not going after, you know, you got the amount of time just spent on this. Could be spent towards gazillions of dollars of money stolen from American people by central bankers that they're not going to touch. And I'm so, anytime anybody would say, but you need government to what? Show me what? Show me what they're doing that's, you know, a benefit to me. And I know as a Supreme Court Justice, Oliver, you know, you probably got another opinion, but I'm telling you, from an anarchist libertarian type, man, I'm just, every time I turn around, there are example after example after example of why I should have less and less respect for the government and why they're there. Because they're not doing, because what the case is, this whole thing was a wiretap thing. They went after this private investigator, Pelicano, and he had a nice A-list of clients. So they're going, ooh, well, you know this, nobody's heard of Pelicano. Yeah, they got 15-year prison term for him, you know, and that's years ago. This is like 2004, right? So then we're going, no, is that in 2002? So it started a long time ago. And what happened is they couldn't get any of the big names of having participated in the wiretapping or known about it or paid for it or whatever. So they didn't get any big names. They need some big names for whatever reason, you know, to stop it, to give them more press, to something. They're in Hollywood after all. And I'm sure the prosecutors, they wear really nice suits. So they want to get somebody. They call McTiernan, a director of Predator, Die Hard, Red October, one of the big guys, living in Wyoming. This evening, gets a call, hey, do you know what role did you have in? And you guys go, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. Goodbye. Boom, hangs up the phone. 2 weeks later, he gets indicted. So they're going after him. Now, what have they, I think he's on appeal now. And I mean, they've already gotten a conviction on him?
Yeah, that's right. What we did was had to enter a conditional guilty plea. We preserved our rights on appeal so we could preserve some issues that we could appeal on. John has now appealed his case to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. We have issues dealing with whether or not he should have been prosecuted, whether or not the judge should have recused herself, things of that nature. John had actually taken this case on appeal once before to the Ninth Circuit. He actually prevailed. He won when he appealed this case the first time. It was sent back for a retrial, and instead of retrying him on the same issue, what the prosecutors decided to do was now charge him with two additional felonies. And so after he won on appeal, they added two additional felonies and attempted to prosecute John again a second time for three felonies this time. It gets a little confusing.
Well, what were the other felonies that they're charging him with now? Same thing?
They charged him with perjury as it came back for the second time after he prevailed on appeal.
This
and
is
the perjury was related to the plea that he made in court. They said that he'd given incorrect information during his original plea, and so what they decided to do was not simply retry him, but to add charges after he prevailed on appeal.
Well, how many years is he looking at? Should the government prevail?
Well, he was facing 15 years in prison is what he was facing. What we did was we entered into a conditional plea where the maximum sentence would be 1 year and he would preserve any issues that he had for appeal. And that's where we currently are.
So the thing is that they, you know, from a phone call sitting in Wyoming from anonymous, who knows, says they're FBI, you're facing 15 years to begin with.
That's right.
Okay. And this is from someone that he had hired years before, like in 02 or something, right?
Actually, it was before that. It was in the 90s when he'd gone through a divorce. Yeah.
Wow. So there has to be players. You know, there's always players. There's names. There's people. There's up and coming, and I want, a nicer pinstripe suit prosecutor. There's somebody involved in this at the FBI or U.S. Attorney's Office or something that's trying to make a name for themselves. Give me a name.
Well, I'm not sure. There's several folks involved in the prosecution. I'm not sure who is actually calling the shots here, but it's obvious that prosecutors are, seeking to enhance the sentence every opportunity they can, and that's what's such a shame here.
Well, you know, being a Supreme Court Justice in Mississippi, you've seen this kind of stuff before. I guarantee it. You know, there's prosecutors going, ooh, we're going to get this guy because we can, okay? And then it comes to you, and what are judges able to do? What are they willing to do? You know, how did it impact you when you had these kinds of things come before you?
Yeah, that's actually how I got to know John and how I began representing him. He began looking at these sort of prosecutions going on all around the country, and I was pretty much in a similar situation to him. I was accused of a crime by the federal government and was completely acquitted. They had absolutely no grounds to charge me, and didn't take a jury long to figure that out. But he saw that I'd been prosecuted and realized that I could probably help in his defense, and that's what I do now. I've left the bench, and I've got a law firm in Jackson, Mississippi, and I represent folks who are accused by the federal government of all sorts of things, many times for things that they're actually had nothing to do with. It's not uncommon for prosecutors to enhance charges all the time.
Well, this is how they get, you know, I one of my best friends, criminal defense attorney, and it's just so bad. And he says, the reason, he goes, Ernie, the reason that there are so many plea deals, the reason they have such a high rate of getting somebody to plead or whatever, is because you're facing 20 years for the stupidest thing. They go, hey, you can plead down the 1 year or something, or you're doing the 15. So I mean, the incentive to take a plea is so high, and it's done intentionally. This system is not criminal justice. It's not. I can it be fixed? I mean, you know, is there, what is wrong with the mentality here? The sense of justice is what? They got a shiny badge and always available gun and the men in black guys, and they can rule you don't show them enough ring kissing or turn over on any and everybody, your grandmother, your friends, your children, what, you don't, you know, worship them. They're just going to come after you and make an example. I mean, what's the mentality going on here? Where are we devolved?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. I don't think folks realize it, but the statistics are actually extremely high. Folks that are facing federal prosecution, anybody accused or indicted by the federal government, there's about a 98.5% chance that you will either be convicted or plead guilty. And by far, most of those plead guilty. And it's for the exact reasons you just mentioned. Prosecutors will enhance the charges. You're looking at 50, 70 years, millions of dollars in fine, or you cooperate with the feds and they'll plea you down to a year and a few thousand dollar fine. And folks do the analysis of that and they come to the conclusion that, hey, you know, even if I win, it's going to bankrupt me to fight these charges. And that's the position that the federal government puts many defendants in. You can certainly maintain your innocence and go to trial, but if you do so, you'd better be willing to spend a whole lot of money, because like the movie Predator, once the federal government gets you in their sights, they don't stop until they get you.
Okay, now this is, you know, we're coming up on break here in a minute or so. When we get in the last segment here, this is the point that I wanted, the whole reason I wanted to have you on building up to this. There comes a point at which so many people, when we have the highest incarceration rate on the planet, when we have the federal and local governments entwined with each other, fusion center, multi-jurisdictional task force, and you got to have this law or you don't get your seatbelt money or whatever the heck it is, they have all this social and economic engineering to the point that you have Big Bubba, Big Sister, whatever you want to call it, they're on top saying, thou shalt comply or thou shalt die. And maybe in prison, or maybe not in prison, but gosh darn it, we rule you. When you have a populace that eventually gets, certainly with the economic times that we have coming up now, that, you know, what's the song, freedom's just another way of, you know, nothing left to lose. I mean, you know, I'm looking at a situation now to where the governments at every level here in the United States, when they start to lose all legitimacy because they do not have the perception of being there to dispense justice or fairness or equality or any of the things that they promised to do, it gets to the point to where It gets dangerous. We have revolutions for less reasons, and it's getting closer and closer. Is there any chance of reform? Well, that's what we're going to talk about. How do we step back from the abyss? Well, we're going to talk to former Mississippi Supreme Court Justice Oliver Diaz on that very issue when we come back here and declare your independence just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
All you gotta do is just keep being a butthead. Yeah, that's right. You keep doing that to Americans, and all of a sudden they start pushing back. And they are. They have been for years. It's getting tense out there. And I, you know, last week we had French television came here in the studios because they're looking for the same kind of resistance. I mean, we're the home of the revolution and all that. Well, what happened was in France, they have a logo that has the revolution, you know, the backwards love in it and so on. But the logo's a little bit different. It has a guy standing with his left arm up and his right arm back, like he's throwing a Molotov cocktail with bandana on and everything, like they got their protesters on the streets and riots in France and everything. But he's throwing a bouquet of flowers. And they wanted to come here, the birth of the revolution, where they're going, how come you guys aren't in the streets, man? You guys got where a lot of stuff is going on. Well, what's happening is that we're a little bit different. We're not protesting or begging the government to give us more, to steal from other people, to prosecute more, to have more police go and gun. What? No. We want less. And to the point that, you know, can we just ignore them and maybe they'll go away and we'll have none? Will we be better off with none? I am telling you, it's getting easier and easier for those of the anarchist persuasion to make the, or voluntarist or agorist or whatever you want to call them, is that they're going, you know, well, you're just an anarchist. Compared to what? Compared to what we got now? Compared to these cases where we have federal prosecutors coming after somebody because he didn't kiss her butt when he didn't even know who the heck they were at night when he's at home having dinner with his family? You mean like that? So I'm going, wow, what? So I got to ask this former Supreme Court Justice in Mississippi, Oliver Diaz, what's the solution, man? I mean, can we reform this thing? Are you just trying to save individuals and that happen to come across your desk? Or are we looking at a time to where the entire thing is going to get cast off?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, it's a systemic problem. I mean, we have to do something in this country. When we have the highest incarceration rate of any country in the world, Americans are not worse people than any other country. We don't deserve to be locked up at higher rates than any other country. We've got a problem when we lock up people at the rate that we do. You know, right now, all I can do is deal with it on an individual basis. I hope that by calling attention to individual cases like these, it begins to start the conversation on what we need to do as a country to reform our criminal justice system. We've got to do something. Not only is it not the right approach, I mean, it's bankrupting us to keep all of these people incarcerated. It's a big industry, and that's the problem we're facing. People make money by incarcerating other people. What we have to get away from that mentality.
Well, I mean, how would you reform it? I mean, I'm all ears, man. I'm like, yep, okay. Well, let's what? I mean, how would you get an all-powerful, all-knowing, omnipotent government with the mandatory youth indoctrination camps, aka the government schools, that are breeding support for this kind of stuff? You got, you know, Rock the Vote. You got all this stuff in, you know, corporate and government licensed media just beating you over the head. Heck, I can't even count how many crime shows there are on TV. So every, you know, half the movies that are out are always about some crime, kind of got to go get something. I mean, we're plagued with this concept of we have to have somebody ruling us. And it's getting to the point where it's so much social and economic engineering that the entire system is falling apart. And the very things that the government and the supporters of them and these different agencies, the very thing that they say they are there to protect us from, you know, acts of aggression, of force, of fraud, of property crimes, of stealing, the biggest ones are them doing it. It's the government taking, the government sanctioning, the government granting monopolies, the government letting them get away, the government retroactively passing laws to allow them to get away with it. This, I cannot imagine a system that for any length of time will be supported that acts that way. And throughout history, whenever it has happened, the empires crumbled. We are, when you say we must, what? I mean, give me a step-by-step, man. I mean, you know, what is it? Is it voting? Is voting going to make us free? Are we going to vote the right people? Are we going to, what? I mean, what are we going to do?
Yeah. If I had the outline to that, I would already be implementing it. I mean, you've got to remember their power in numbers. One of the benefits of having the highest incarceration rate is that we also have lots of citizens who are touched by this problem. Only when the citizens rise up and tell their elected officials that they've had enough of this are we going to be able to do something about it. We've got to remember their power in numbers. I mean, we need to take lessons from the French, who don't sit around and have their rights trampled on. They'll go out into the streets and protest. Where are the folks in the United States who are angry enough that their relatives, that their family members are being locked away by our own government?
You know, the thing
that's about it at some point.
You know, the thing that's interesting to me as you study this more, I mean, you know, because I deal with a lot of the young people. We were part of the, you know, we're the ones that started the Ron Paul Revolution and so on here out of Phoenix. And all of a sudden you saw these tons, massive amount of young people that got involved in this. And a lot of us activists from back in the day, we were a bunch of libertarian activists from the early 90s, we knew what was going to happen. A lot of people didn't understand it. They didn't see what was going to happen. But in France and Europe and so on, the people that are in the streets are wanting more government. They don't want the austerity cuts. They don't want the government to get smaller. They don't want, you know, they're, and a lot of times they got, you know, provocateurs in there. It's just all managed, manipulated, just like it always is anyway. Well, here, it's, I think they're upset and angry that they don't have more violence so that they can come crashing down on them. And to think that we're going to influence our elected officials to do anything, certainly for any amount of time, you can always get the elected officials to, you know, say how much they're for freedom or how libertarian they are or how free market they are or how much they're concerned about fill in the blank, but they never actually really do it. So that's what's being learned. So I'm of the opinion that what's happening, and we're going to see it in 2012. You know, I'm the founder of the Ron Paul Revolution. I'm the one that created the logo. And I'll tell you, this next Friday, they want to have November 5th is, you know, remember 5th of November, the Friday after the election. They go put up the signs again. We're going to do whatever. But it was very peaceful. We're all about the love, throwing the flowers, because they want you to be violent. But the thing is they want us to try and think we're going to have some kind of influence inside the system. Well, Dr. Paul did that with Campaign for Liberty. We'll see how that works out. But I'm telling you this. You are not going to be able to vote yourself free in this kind of situation. I don't see it happening. I don't see that we need to convince them of anything. We need to convince each other. And that's what's happening. Just like what you're saying, you have so many people affected by a police state, by incarceration for stupidest crimes, by overreacting, by having, you know, 20 years, you know, for stupid stuff just because you didn't kiss the ring fast enough. And this is what's going to have the people turn against not just this government, but government in general, that there has never been throughout history to have anything. There's always the promise. There's the big promise. We're going to protect and defend individual rights and from the foreign invader and the domestic usurper and the yada, 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 yada. And whenever you scratch the surface, you always run across cases exactly like yours to where you have them getting way out of hand because they can. Quit giving them the power to do it. I don't want to change the person wearing the ring of power. I want to chuck the ring of power into the fires of Mordor and be done with it. So I'm going, you know, when I look at, you know, what should we do? I mean, if you want us to rise up, you mean rise up with resistance, violence, or peaceful resistance, noncompliance? I mean, what's your method?
Yeah, no, it's got to be education. People have to be educated about what's going on. And it's only when folks realize the true extent of the problem that we're facing. The United States has been through a lot in our 200 and some odd year history, and we've learned that we can transfer power peacefully in this country, and mainly it's through education, and that's why I like to call attention to cases like these and let people know exactly what's going on out there.
I'm with you, brother. I'm on your side. That's why I wanted to have you on. And, you know, we all have a different conclusion or a summary of it and direction we're going. I'll tell you where mine is. It's probably right about where you're at. You know, people need to know what's going on and who's doing it. And I'd like to see some names attached to who the prosecutors are, you know, who the FBI agents are, what's their past history, what's the future, what's the cases that they've taken on since then. And, you know, it's always the worst that do this kind of stuff that get promoted. I mean, have you been finding that be the case also?
Well, it is, but it's more a systemic problem. I mean, it's folks that have to feel like they have to get a big name in order to get that promotion. It's those type environments that we're working with that need to be reformed. We need to work for justice and not for individuals who are looking for promotions.
Well, justice. Define that real quick.
Well.
Yeah, if we had more time, Oliver Diaz, go ahead and give out some websites. Go ahead and bring the music down a little bit. Go ahead and give out some websites to where they would be able to get more information on this case and what you're doing.
Well, my website at my office is msjustice.com. My law partner, Chuck McRae, is another former Supreme Court Justice of Mississippi, and myself. We take on cases like this, and we're more than happy to help others out.
Oh, thank you. Do that again. MS what?
MSJustice.net. I'm sorry. MS Justice as in Mississippi Justice. MSJustice.net.
MSJustice.net. And, you know, this is, we'll be staying in touch. We'll be keeping a track of this. I'm interested in this type of issue. Thank you very much, Oliver Diaz, for coming on and sharing this information with us. Hopefully we all learn something. We'll be right back.